This is Ozarks at Large. Let's take our minds far away from here for a moment. On Titan, Saturn's largest moon, NASA's Cassini spacecraft orbited Titan, and some of the images came back with what astronomers nicknamed magic islands. These are radar-bright features captured by Cassini's radar. Those bright features were seen in some of the images taken by Cassini, but would be gone the next time the spacecraft could photograph those same spots. These transient magic islands were of unknown origin and were located around the seas of Titan. Titan, you see, is the only place in the solar system besides Earth known to have liquid rivers, lakes, and seas. It may be that the magic islands are bubbles, and research and experiments done on the University of Arkansas campus helping us understand more about all of this. Kendra Farnsworth, a doctoral candidate in the Arkansas Center for Space and Planetary Sciences, is first author of a study published in the journal Geophysical Research Letters. Well, she recreated Titan's atmospheric conditions in one of the center's five planetary simulation chambers. We invited her to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio last week because we had so many questions, including this one. How can a celestial body with temperatures around 290 degrees Fahrenheit below zero have lakes?
Water ice on Titan is frozen. So water on Titan is frozen. Okay. And that actually makes up the bedrock of Titan. So if we think of the rocks here on Earth, that would be water ice on Titan. So the lakes and seas, actually the largest sea on Titan is about the size of the Great Lakes here on Earth. And they also have some rivers that connect a few of them. And those are made up primarily of methane and ethane liquid, which is gas here on Earth.
Okay, because our water here is good old reliable hydrogen and oxygen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But methane and ethane there makes up the water there.
Yes. And there's also a methane hydrologic cycle. So methane evaporates and rains out, similar to what we have here on Earth with our water cycle, hydrologic cycle. But on Titan, it's methane.
Okay. So we have these bright radar readings from Cassini. And they get dubbed magic islands. And the natural curiosity, I guess, says, what in the world could these be? What could be creating these?
Yes. So what's extremely interesting about magic islands is that on radar, Titan's lakes are extremely flat, which means that they don't even have waves, okay. For instance. The waves would have to be less than 3 centimeters tall for on Titan, which means that the winds on Titan aren't very strong, and so they're extremely flat. So if you see this magic island, that means something is disturbing the surface or the liquid column. And so magic islands were first believed to be either floating or suspended solids on the surface, waves, or a column of bubbles, for example.
Now, I think a lot of listeners will be shocked to find out that you can recreate something that can help us understand what magic islands are. You do this in the planetary simulator?
Yes. So I have a Titan surface simulation chamber at the University of Arkansas. And this chamber is about 6 feet tall. So it's pretty large compared to the other chambers we have at our university. And we can recreate the surface temperature and pressure of Titan. So that's about 90 Kelvin or negative 290 Fahrenheit. And 1.5 bar nitrogen atmosphere. So that's about 1.5 times our own pressure, which is very similar to Earth. And so I can insert methane and ethane gas into the chamber, which then turns into a liquid. And I create small ponds of various mixtures of methane and ethane ponds.
Mm-hmm. Help me out with this chamber. So how do you see into the chamber?
With cameras.
Okay, because there's not a window.
It's a big steel chamber. So we have cameras inside, which don't like to work at 90 Kelvin.
I don't know of anything that really does, yeah.
Yes, so we just get lucky if our electronics work.
So are you, obviously you're outside the planetary simulator. Are you looking at a monitor, a computer monitor?
Yes.
And then what do you see? I mean, what was it like when you first saw some potential magic island replicas developing?
Yeah, so it was actually really exciting. I was running different types of experiments. So the first experiments, I was looking at freezing points of methane, ethane, and nitrogen mixtures. So the nitrogen in the atmosphere dissolves into liquid similar to CO2 into water. And so I was trying to figure out what the freezing point of this mixture was. So I was cooling it down to the limit of the chamber, which is about 86 Kelvin. And as I was warming, after the experiment was over, I happened to see a few bubbles rising. And so far, at that point, bubbles had just been speculated. They hadn't been discovered or proven in the laboratory. And then I was running a different set of experiments that titrated ethane into methane. So slowly dripped ethane, into a methane pond. And this was for a different project as well. And all of a sudden, I looked over and there was an eruption of bubbles that came up and hit my camera. And I just looked over, wait a minute, what's going on? That wasn't supposed to happen. And so we actually turned all of our focus to looking at how can we create these bubbles, under what circumstances do these bubbles form, and how violent they actually are. It's pretty amazing.
So you were not seeking these bubbles or these magic islands?
No. Mm-mm.
I guess that's sometimes how science works. You're working on something else, and then the right conditions come up. When you saw that bubble hit the camera, do you remember what you said? Did you exclaim? Did you... Because that would be a very exciting moment, I would think.
Yes. I just went, oh, wow, like, what was that? And, of course, I couldn't see out of that camera anymore, so I couldn't see exactly what was going on. But then when I recreated the experiment later, I videoed those experiments. And so now I have quite a few videos of the actual explosions, and it's pretty neat.
What is the scientific sort of pivot that you make then when you've got the bubbles, you think, okay, this might be it, and then it turns to trying to recreate them?
Mm-hmm.
Does that start immediately? Do you put the other things on hold? You can tell I'm not a scientist. I'm fascinated by the process.
Yes. So each experiment in my chamber lasts between 4 to 6 hours for one data point on your plot. It would take quite a few hours. And so since I was focusing on those experiments, each day or a few times a week I would run one of those experiments. So if those all get put on hold, then, you know, I just start running those six-hour experiments just to find bubbles.
Mm-hmm. How much work goes into this before you're ready to put it into a journal?
Oh, goodness. So actually the first time with the first set of experiments when I first saw bubbles, that was back in December of 2015.
Okay.
So quite a few years ago. And when I discovered – so I was focusing on those sets of experiments because that's what I thought were probably the only way to create bubbles. So we're focusing on that protocol. And then I found the new new bubbles with the explosions probably about a year and a half ago. And so – this paper was actually written and ready to be published a year ago. And so then it has to go through my co-authors and everybody has to agree. And then when you send it into a journal, they send it out to review, which you have to edit. And so it takes quite a bit of time to actually get to publication.
Mm-hmm. You're the lead author.
Yes.
Where are the other authors? Are they here? Are they elsewhere?
So I have my advisor is on the paper, so he is here with me. I also have my co-advisor of mine is at MIT, and his postdoc is also on the paper as well.
What got you interested in what's out there?
So that actually started a very long time ago. I grew up in Austin, Texas, just 45 minutes west of Austin, and I did see the Milky Way across the night sky, and my dad is an electrical engineer and always had a telescope. And so growing up, I looked at the stars and at Saturn and just found the universe fascinating. And so when I was in middle school, I decided that I wanted to work for NASA. I wasn't sure how or what I was going to be doing, but NASA somehow, because it's just amazing. And so I've told that to people, you know, my whole life growing up, and everyone's like, okay, that's nice. but then I started off doing astrophysics at Baylor University, and I was a student athlete there, and ended up, I had shoulder surgery, and my coach and I didn't really get along, and so I ended up transferring to Texas A&M, which was a fantastic mm-hmm. decision. And actually switched majors there. And then I decided after I graduated that you know, NASA is still my passion. This is really what I want to do. So I started looking at PhD programs, and I knew I loved laboratory work because at A&M I worked at a stable isotope lab and knew I loved laboratory work. And the University of Arkansas is one of the only universities that allow laboratory planetary work. So I found my way here, and my advisor had a NASA grant for my project on Titan, and Titan's one of my favorite planetary bodies, so that worked out perfectly. And I love Fayetteville, so everything just fell into place for me. Yeah.
What do you think? It's hard to jump into the future, but what do you think we might be able to learn or know better or apply the fact that we now kind of know what these magic islands are? Are there applications, or perhaps we don't know fully yet what this knowledge will lead us to?
Yes. So interestingly, magic islands, they're in the community, there's two different groups of people. So there's the bubble people, mm-hmm. which I'm currently in, and there's also waves. So we haven't quite narrowed it down between the two. So there's definitely people in the community that are still working on this. But what's interesting is if they, even if magic islands are not bubbles, they turn out to be waves, because of the nitrogen that's dissolved into the liquid, you just change the temperature, the concentration slightly, and you'll have nitrogen outgassing very quickly. So these bubbles are nitrogen. And what's interesting is if you have, so NASA had been talking about a submarine, sending a submarine to Titan at one point. And what's interesting is if you have a submarine that's, you know, powered by, you know, it gives off heat. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so that would actually change your liquid temperature around you and create off-gassing with bubbles. And it might be difficult to propel your submarine if that's the case, which is interesting. We also have NASA just a few months back announced that Dragonfly is going to Titan in a New Frontiers mission. And Dragonfly is a octocopter that will be flying on the surface.
Is your father still with us?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. When you called him and told him about the bubble, what was that like? I mean, here's this man who took out the telescope with you all those years. Was he excited?
Yes, he's extremely excited. He has, I've actually done a few interviews with different blog posts and space.com and such. And my dad printed out every single blog post and in my paper, and he's just extremely excited for everything.
Are these planetary simulators ever cleaned? Do people go into them and scrub them or whatever?
Can you
get in there? I mean, yeah.
Yes. So my chamber takes significantly longer than others to take apart. When something breaks, so usually it'll stay together until something isn't working, and then we'll take it apart. It usually takes about a work day to take it apart, and then we'll do the maintenance on the chamber ourselves. So I work with a colleague of mine and our lab manager to do maintenance on the chamber, and then that usually takes a week or two.
Wow.
And then it'll take about a week to put back together. So actually, our maintenance times can range anywhere from 2 weeks to a year, just depending on what exactly is wrong.
Back to patience.
Yes.
Hey, Kendra, congratulations. Thanks so much for coming in.
Yes, thank you.
Kendra Farnsworth is a doctoral student at the University of Arkansas and first author of an article in Geophysical Research Letters about the mysterious magic islands on Titan, Saturn's largest moon. She talked with us at the Carver Center for Public Radio last week.